parchment shredded with a deafening rip, the heavy gold wax seal crumbling onto the Persian rug. She was supposed to weep, to beg, to sign away her life. Instead, she threw the ruined divorce papers at his chest. The ruthless Duke didn't flinch. He just smiled and slowly locked the heavy oak door. London in the winter of 1884 was a city of impenetrable fog and even thicker secrets. In the heart of Mayfair stood Ashbourne House, a towering limestone mansion that mirrored the man who owned it, imposing, immaculate, and entirely devoid of warmth. Alistair Montgomery, the Duke of Ashbourne, was a man spoken of in terrified whispers within the echoing halls of Parliament. He was the architect of political ruin, a man who had dismantled the historic House of Harrington with a single calculating speech in the House of Lords. He did not possess a heart. He possessed a ledger, and everyone in his life was either an asset or a liability. 2 years ago, Lady Beatrice Hawthorne had become his greatest asset. The Hawthorne family name was one of the oldest and most revered in England, carrying a legacy of unblemished virtue and royal favor. But behind closed doors, Beatrice's late father had gambled away their fortune in the private rooms of St. James's clubs. To save her family from the devastating shame of bankruptcy, Beatrice was sold into a marriage of convenience. Alistair needed the Hawthorne pedigree to sanitize his own family's recent darker scandals involving his late father's colonial investments. Beatrice needed his staggering wealth. It was a transaction sealed with a cold kiss at the altar of St. George's. For 24 months, their marriage was a study in absolute isolation. Alistair spent his days in the city, and his nights in his private study, a glass of scotch, his only companion. Beatrice was given a staggering allowance, free rein of the estate, and the silent, unspoken directive to stay out of his way. She played the dutiful Duchess, hosting the obligatory charity galas, smiling politely at the Duchess of Devonshire's balls, and swallowing the bitter humiliation of her husband's blatant indifference. But high society abhors a vacuum, and where there is no passion, rumours breed like rot. Recently the whispers had grown louder, taking on a vicious, distinct shape. Lady Clara Highsmith, a widow of considerable wealth and ruthless ambition, had been seen entirely too often at the Duke's side during parliamentary dinners. Clara was everything Beatrice was not supposed to be: loud, scandalously bold, and deeply entrenched in the political machinations that Alistair thrived on. It was an open secret in the drawing rooms of London that Clara intended to be the next Duchess of Ashbourne. But divorce in the 19th century was no simple matter. The Matrimonial Causes Act required public, devastating proof of infidelity or cruelty. Beatrice knew that if Alistair wanted her gone, he would not simply ask her to leave. He would orchestrate her destruction. He would frame her, ruin her reputation, and cast her out into the streets, ensuring the Hawthorne name took the entirety of the blame, while he played the victimized lord. What the Duke of Ashbourne failed to realize, however, was that the quiet, dutiful woman he had married was not a porcelain doll. Beatrice possessed a mind as sharp as a cutthroat razor. While Alistair played his political games, Beatrice observed. She noted the subtle shifting of loyalties among the household staff. She noticed when Alistair's cousin, Lord Reginald Croft, began making unannounced visits to the estate's private ledgers. Reginald was a weak, greedy man who had always resented Alistair's inheritance. Beatrice began slipping into the Duke's study in the dead of night, her candle shielded by a silver spoon, meticulously reading through the discarded drafts and misplaced financial reports Reginald left behind. She discovered a conspiracy so deeply woven it made her blood run cold. Reginald Croft was embezzling thousands of pounds from the Ashbourne mining enterprises in Cornwall. But the true horror was the paper trail. Reginald wasn't just stealing. he was meticulously forging documents to make it appear as though the diverted funds were being funneled directly into the private accounts of Beatrice's brother in Paris. They were setting her up. Clara Highsmith and Reginald Croft had formed an alliance. Clara would get the Duke, Reginald would get the stolen fortune, and Beatrice would be publicly accused of treasonous theft and infidelity, allowing Alistair to divorce her with the full blessing of the crown. The most agonizing question kept Beatrice awake for weeks. Was Alistair the architect of this plot, or was he its victim? Given his cold-blooded reputation, society would assume he engineered it to be rid of her. But Beatrice had spent 2 years analyzing the man. Alistair was ruthless, yes, but he was also fiercely protective of his own intelligence. He despised sloppiness. The forged ledgers were clever, but they possessed a frantic, desperate quality that did not match the Duke's elegant, lethal precision. Beatrice made her decision. She would not be a sacrificial lamb. She spent the next month quietly hiring her own private investigators, utilizing the remainder of her Hawthorne dowry to employ former Bow Street runners. She intercepted Clara's perfumed letters to Reginald. She secured sworn affidavits from the Cornish bank managers. She bound every piece of explosive evidence into a single leather-bound dossier. She was ready. Now all she had to do was wait for the blade to fall. The storm broke on a Tuesday afternoon in late November. The sky over London was the color of bruised iron, and rain lashed against the tall arched windows of Ashbourne House. Beatrice was in the conservatory, calmly trimming the dead leaves from a white orchid, when the heavy footsteps of the butler echoed against the marble floor. "Your Grace," the butler murmured, his eyes fixed firmly on the floor. "The Duke requests your presence in his private study. Immediately, he is accompanied by Mr. Fitzroy." Henry Fitzroy of Chancery Lane. He was the most feared solicitor in England, a man whose presence in a drawing room usually preceded a total social annihilation. The blade was falling. "Tell my husband I shall be there momentarily," Beatrice replied, her voice steady, betraying none of the adrenaline flooding her veins. She set down her shears. She smoothed the skirts of her emerald green silk dress, retrieved the heavy leather dossier hidden beneath the floorboard of her vanity, and walked toward the wolf's den. The study was dim-smelling of leather rain and expensive tobacco. Alistair sat behind his massive mahogany desk. He looked immaculate and terrifying, his dark hair neatly swept back, his sharp jaw locked in tension. His striking grey eyes, usually devoid of emotion, glinted with a strange, dark intensity as Beatrice entered. To his right stood Henry Fitzroy, a balding, nervous man, clutching a thick velvet portfolio. Standing by the fireplace, nursing a glass of brandy with a smug expression, was Lord Reginald Croft. Beatrice took a seat in the high-backed leather chair opposite her husband, crossing her hands neatly in her lap. "You summoned me, Alistair, and I see we have guests. How formal." Alistair did not speak immediately. He studied her face, searching for the fear that usually accompanied his summons. Finding none, his brow furrowed a fraction of an inch. "Mr. Fitzroy has something to present to you, Beatrice. I suggest you listen carefully. Your future depends entirely upon your next actions." Fitzroy cleared his throat, pulling a thick stack of parchment from his portfolio. "Your Grace," he began, his voice trembling slightly under Alistair's imposing aura, "I have been instructed by the Duke of Ashbourne to present you with a formal petition for the dissolution of your marriage." Beatrice kept her face perfectly blank. "On what grounds, Mr. Fitzroy?" Reginald chuckled from the fireplace. "On the grounds of severe financial misconduct, Beatrice, and unfortunately moral failing. It seems your family's old habits have returned. Fitzroy hastily continued, eager to finish his grim task. We have obtained conclusive evidence that over the past 18 months, funds exceeding £80,000 have been illegally diverted from the Ashbourne estate into foreign accounts held by your brother. Furthermore, we possess correspondence suggesting an intimate attachment between yourself and a French cavalry officer who facilitated these transfers. The sheer audacity of the lie almost made Beatrice laugh. It was a perfect airtight frame job. The Duke in his boundless mercy. Fitzroy rushed on, pushing the papers across the desk toward her. Is willing to spare you the public humiliation of a criminal trial and the absolute ruin of the Hawthorne name. If you sign these papers now, admitting to irreconcilable differences and voluntarily relinquishing your title, the Duke will quietly dissolve the marriage. You will be provided a small cottage in Yorkshire and an allowance of £200 a year. You will never set foot in London again. And if I refuse? Beatrice asked softly. Then I take these ledgers to Scotland Yard by nightfall, Alistair said. His voice was like cracked ice. Your brother will hang for defrauding a duke, and you will be stripped of everything in a public court. Beatrice stared at the divorce papers, the thick, creamy parchment, the aggressive, sprawling signatures at the bottom, the heavy gold wax seal of the Crown's legal office. She looked up at Reginald, who was practically vibrating with victorious glee. Then she looked at Alistair. His grey eyes were unreadable, calculating. You believe I stole from you, Alistair? She asked, her voice dropping to a whisper. You believe I took a lover? The documents are quite thorough, Beatrice, Alistair replied coldly. Sign the papers. Slowly Beatrice reached out. She placed her delicate fingers on the edge of the documents. Reginald smirked. Fitzroy offered her a silver fountain pen. Instead of taking the pen, Beatrice closed her hands over the thick stack of parchment. With a sudden vicious yank, she tore the heavy papers perfectly in half. The sound ripped through the quiet study like a gunshot. The heavy wax seal shattered raining gold flakes over Alistair's immaculate desk. Not satisfied, she placed the halves together and tore them again, tossing the shredded remnants directly at her husband's chest. Have you gone mad? Reginald shouted, dropping his brandy glass. It shattered against the hearth. You stupid girl, you've just signed your family's death warrant. Fitzroy gasped, backing away, as if the torn paper were on fire. Alistair didn't move. A piece of the torn document rested on his shoulder. He looked down at it, then slowly raised his eyes to meet his wife's. I am not going to Yorkshire, Beatrice said, her voice ringing with absolute terrifying authority. And I am not signing away my life for a crime I did not commit. Without breaking eye contact with Alistair, she reached into her own emerald silk reticule and pulled out her leather dossier, slamming it onto the desk. Your investigators are remarkably incompetent, Alistair, Beatrice sneered, leaning forward. Or perhaps they were simply paid off by the man standing by your fireplace. The ledgers Mr. Fitzroy just referenced are forgeries drafted by a man who presses too hard on his downstrokes, a distinct habit of your cousin Reginald. Inside this dossier you will find the real ledgers recovered from a safe house in Cornwall. You will also find sworn affidavits from the bank clerks who watched Lord Reginald transfer those funds into an account belonging to Lady Clara Highsmith. Reginald's face went the colour of spoiled milk. Lies she's backed into a corner, Alistair, she's inventing. Shut up, Reginald, Alistair commanded softly. The absolute menace in those three words silenced the room instantly. Beatrice didn't stop. Furthermore, you will find 5 handwritten letters from Clara to Reginald, detailing exactly how they planned to frame my brother, push me out and split the Ashbourne mining profits once Clara took my place in your bed. I did not steal from you, my lord. The rats in your own house did. And if you had bothered to speak to your wife, instead of treating her like a decorative vase, for 2 years, you might have noticed the infestation before it cost you £80,000. The silence in the room was absolute. Only the sound of the rain beating against the glass could be heard. Fitzroy was sweating profusely. Reginald was frozen, looking frantically toward the door. Alistair slowly reached out and pulled Beatrice's dossier toward him. He opened it. He spent 3 agonizing minutes reading the letters, examining the banking seals, tracing the signatures with his eyes. When he finally looked up, the cold, dead expression he had worn for 2 years was gone. Instead, a slow, predatory smile spread across the Duke of Ashbourne's face. It was the most terrifying, magnificent thing Beatrice had ever seen. Alistair stood up. He did not look at his cousin. He looked at Fitzroy. "Mr. Fitzroy, leave us, and take that pathetic piece of garbage by the fireplace with you. Lock him in the cellar until I decide whether to hang him or shoot him." "Alistair, be reasonable," Reginald stammered, stepping backward. "She fabricated this. She... If you speak another word, Reginald, I will cut out your tongue right here on the carpet," Alistair said, his voice entirely conversational. Fitzroy scrambled forward, grabbing Reginald by the arm and practically dragging the terrified nobleman out of the study. The heavy oak door clicked shut behind them. Alistair and Beatrice were alone. The shredded divorce papers lay scattered between them. Alistair walked slowly around the desk. Beatrice held her ground, her chin tilted up, her heart hammering against her ribs. He stopped mere inches from her. He was so close, she could smell the bergamot and scotch on his skin. He didn't yell. He didn't demand explanations. Instead, Alistair reached past her, turned the heavy brass key in the lock of the oak door, and pocketed the key. "You tore up my royal decree, Duchess," he murmured, his voice a low, vibrating hum that sent a shiver down her spine. The cold-blooded Duke was smiling, and his eyes were burning with a dark, consuming fire. "I think it is high time we finally introduced ourselves properly." The click of the brass lock turning sounded like a hammer striking an anvil in the quiet study. Beatrice stood her ground, her spine rigid, though her pulse fluttered wildly in the hollow of her throat. For 2 years she had navigated this man by avoiding him. Now she was locked in a room with him, having just obliterated his world. Alistair reached out his long, aristocratic fingers, lightly grazing the edge of the shredded divorce decree. He picked up a piece bearing the royal seal and let it fall to the carpet. Then his slate-gray eyes locked onto hers. "I have dismantled political dynasties, Beatrice. I have outmaneuvered chancellors and ruined lords," Alistair said, his voice dropping to a dangerous velvety timbre. "And yet the most brilliant cutthroat strategist in London was sitting in my own drawing room, quietly pruning orchids. You made the mistake of confusing my silence for stupidity," Beatrice replied, refusing to step back as he closed the distance between them. "I was sold to you, Alistair. I accepted that. But I will never be collateral damage in your wars. If you thought I would quietly board a train to Yorkshire and let you brand my family with treason, you are vastly less intelligent than the House of Lords believes you to be." Alistair did not flinch at the insult. Instead, the dark, predatory smile returned. He stepped so close that the heat radiating from his chest permeated her thin silk bodice. "I was blind," he murmured, raising a hand to lightly trace the line of her jaw. His touch was startlingly warm, sending a jolt of electricity straight down to her toes. "I bought a hawthorn to polish my family's tarnished reputation. I expected a porcelain doll. I did not realize I had purchased a queen who could slit throats with a silver spoon. Tell me, Duchess, how did you get the Cornish bank managers to sign those affidavits? They are notoriously loyal to my family. Beatrice held his gaze, her breathing shallow. I simply reminded them that while you signed their paychecks, it was the Hawthorne family who secured their banking charters a century ago, and I offered them something Lady Clara Highsmith could not, absolute immunity, when Scotland Yard eventually arrived to seize the ledgers. A low, deep laugh rumbled in Alistair's chest. It was a sound Beatrice had never heard before, rich, genuine, and deeply appreciative. "Brilliant," he whispered, his thumb brushing over her lower lip. "Utterly, terrifyingly brilliant." "Don't patronize me, Alistair," she snapped, batting his hand away, though her skin burned where he had touched her. "Reginald is locked in your cellar, but Clara is still free. She has the ear of Lord Randolph Churchill and half of Parliament. If she realizes Reginald has been discovered, she will burn the remaining letters and claim I forged the dossier. She will use her political leverage to crush my brother in Paris before you can even file formal charges." The amusement vanished from Alistair's eyes, replaced instantly by the cold, calculating intellect that made him so feared. "She will try, but Clara's arrogance is her fatal flaw. She believes she has already won." He turned toward his mahogany desk, pouring two glasses of amber scotch. He handed one to Beatrice. She hesitated, then took it. "Tomorrow evening." Alistair continued, his eyes gleaming over the rim of his crystal glass. "Lord Salisbury is hosting the grand winter reception at Hatfield House. Half the government will be there. Clara will certainly be in attendance waiting for me to arrive and subtly announce that my wife has been dispatched to the country. We are going to give her exactly what she wants." Beatrice took a sip of the scotch, the liquid burning a trail of fire down her throat. "A trap." "A public execution," Alistair corrected smoothly. "I do not merely want her arrested, Beatrice. I want her utterly destroyed. I want her stripped of her social standing, her wealth, and her dignity in front of the very society she sought to rule." He stepped closer again, his voice dropping to a harsh whisper. "No one plots against my wife and survives." The possessiveness in his words caught Beatrice off guard. My wife. For 2 years she had been his burden. Now she was his territory. "What do you need me to do?" she asked. Alistair reached out gently, taking the glass from her hand and setting it on the desk. He wrapped his arms around her waist, pulling her flush against his hard, muscular frame. Beatrice gasped at the sudden, overwhelming intimacy. "I need you to be exactly who you are, Beatrice," he whispered, lowering his mouth to hover just inches from her ear. "A cold-blooded duchess. Put on your most devastating gown. Tomorrow night we walk into Hatfield House together. We play the game, and then we spring the trap." He leaned back just enough to look into her eyes. The fire in his gaze was no longer just calculation. It was raw, unbridled desire. "But first," Alistair murmured, his gaze dropping to her lips, "I believe I have 2 years of grievous neglect to make up for." When his mouth finally crashed down on hers, there was nothing cold about the Duke of Ashbourne. He kissed her with the desperate, starving intensity of a man who had suddenly discovered water in a desert. It was a kiss that demanded everything and apologized for nothing. Beatrice's initial shock melted into a fierce, answering heat. She tangled her fingers in his immaculate dark hair, kissing him back with all the pent-up frustration and passion of her isolated marriage. The divorce papers lay forgotten on the rug. The marriage of convenience was dead. In its place, a terrifying, unbreakable alliance was born. The following evening, the grand ballroom of Hatfield House was ablaze with the light of 1,000 crystal chandeliers. The elite of British society moved across the polished marble in a sea of velvet, silk, and glittering diamonds. At the center of the room holding court near the towering champagne fountain, was Lady Clara Highsmith. She wore a gown of midnight blue, dripping in sapphires, looking every inch the aristocratic victor. She laughed delicately at a joke made by a visiting diplomat, her eyes darting toward the grand entrance every few seconds. She was waiting for Alistair. She was waiting for her crown. The heavy double door swung open, and the majordomo struck his staff against the floor. "Their graces the Duke and Duchess of Ashbourne." The ballroom fell into a sudden, shocked silence. The string quartet missed a beat. Hundreds of eyes snapped toward the entrance. They were expecting the Duke to arrive alone, brooding, and quietly victorious. Instead, Alistair Montgomery strode into the room, looking like a conquering king, but it was the woman on his arm who stole the breath from the room. Beatrice wore a gown of scandalous blood-red silk that clung to her curves like a second skin, a stark departure from the demure pastels she had worn for 2 years. A fortune in hawthorn rubies rested against her collarbone. Her head was held high, her expression one of absolute, untouchable power. Alistair's hand rested firmly on the small of her back, his thumb subtly stroking her spine in a gesture of possessive intimacy that sent ripples of gossip through the crowd. Clara Highsmith's smile froze. Her grip on her champagne flute tightened so violently her knuckles turned white. "Showtime," Alistair murmured into Beatrice's ear, his breath warm against her skin. "I will circle the room and secure the magistrate. Break her, my love." Beatrice offered him a devastatingly beautiful smile. "With pleasure." As Alistair seamlessly detached himself to speak with Lord Chief Justice Coleridge near the smoking room, Beatrice glided straight through the parting crowd, moving directly toward her enemy. "Lady Clara," Beatrice said smoothly, stopping mere inches from the widow. "What a stunning gown. Midnight blue is so forgiving when one needs to hide in the shadows." Clara recovered quickly, pasting on a veneer of false sympathy. "Beatrice, darling, we are all so surprised to see you. I had heard rumors. Something about a sudden departure for Yorkshire." "Rumors are such fickle things, aren't they?" Beatrice replied softly, her voice carrying just enough for the surrounding aristocrats to lean in. "For instance, I recently heard a rumor about an £80,000 discrepancy in the Ashbourne mining ledgers, and a rather clumsy forgery involving my brother in Paris." Clara's eyes flared with sudden panic, but she forced a laugh. "I have no idea what you are talking about, Your Grace. Your husband's finances are hardly my concern." "Oh, but they are," Beatrice whispered, taking a deliberate step closer. "Considering Lord Reginald Croft has spent the last 24 hours locked in my cellar, singing like a canary." The color entirely drained from Clara's face. The champagne glass trembled in her hand. "You're lying," Clara hissed, her refined accent slipping into something harsh and desperate. "Alistair wouldn't listen to you. You're a penniless hawthorn. He despises you." "Alistair doesn't need to listen to me," Beatrice smiled sweetly. "He listened to Chief Inspector Abberline, who is currently standing behind that velvet curtain to your left, alongside the Lord Chief Justice." Clara's eyes darted frantically toward the heavy crimson drapery near the alcove. A polished black shoe and the unmistakable edge of a police inspector's coat were visible beneath the hem. "You see, Clara," Beatrice continued, her voice cold and merciless, "Reginald handed over everything. The letters you wrote him, the banking transfers to your private accounts. We know you orchestrated the embezzlement to frame me. Alistair is not a man who forgives theft, but he is particularly unforgiving when a parasite tries to manipulate his marriage." "This is a bluff," Clara whispered, but she was shaking violently. Just then, Alistair appeared at Beatrice's side. He did not look at Clara. He looked only at his wife, his eyes filled with dark, consuming adoration. Is there a problem here, my dear?
No problem at all, darling,
Beatrice said, leaning into his touch. Lady Clara was just leaving. Indeed. Alistair finally turned his gaze to Clara, and the absolute zero-degree hatred in his eyes made the widow physically recoil. The Chief Inspector is waiting for you by the servant's exit, Clara. You have two choices. You will quietly leave this ball, pack your bags, and board the midnight ferry to Calais. If you ever set foot on English soil again, the warrant for your arrest will be executed, and you will rot in Newgate Prison for conspiracy and fraud. You can't do this to me. Clara choked out tears of rage, springing to her eyes. I have friends in Parliament. I have. You have nothing. Alistair cut her off effortlessly. By tomorrow morning, Lord Salisbury will have the full dossier. You are a pariah, Clara. Leave now before I decide to let the inspector arrest you in the middle of this ballroom. Clara looked at the impassive, terrifying faces of the Duke and Duchess. She looked at the curtain where the inspector stood. With a strangled sob, she turned and fled the ballroom, pushing her way through the confused crowd like a rat escaping a sinking ship. The execution was over. Beatrice had won. Alistair looked down at his wife, a genuine smile playing on his lips. You are magnificent, he whispered. I am a hawthorn. Beatrice replied, her eyes sparkling. We play to win. Later that night, the heavy oak doors of the Ashbourne House master suite clicked shut, but this time it was not an ultimatum that locked them inside. It was Alistair pulling Beatrice into his arms, kissing her with a fierce, possessive hunger that chased away the lingering ghosts of their two-year silence. The cold-blooded Duke had finally met his match, and the true reign of the Duke and Duchess of Ashbourne had only just begun. Wow, what a twist! If you loved this intense, historical romance of betrayal power and a brilliant heroine who refuses to be a victim, make sure to hit that like button, share this video with your fellow romance lovers, and subscribe to our channel for more epic audio dramas. Want to hear what happens next in the Ashbourne legacy? Let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to ring the bell for notifications.